welcome to a burning fire, Jeremiah 20 and verse 9. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Our lesson is taken from the Old Testament book of Nehemiah. Paul wrote in Romans 15:4 that whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. There are many lessons we need to learn from the account that we are now about to consider. The record begins with the Jews in captivity. Following the reign of Saul and David and Solomon, the nation of Israel divided into two nations, Judah on the south and Israel on the north. These two nations existed side by side for many years. Eventually, however, due to the sinfulness of the people, God allowed Assyria to overrun northern Israel and to take them into a captivity from which they, as a nation, never returned. Judah continued for over a century longer, but finally fell to Babylon for the same sinful reasons. And they were taken into captivity for a period of some 70 years. This captivity was coming to a close during the time of the events recorded in Nehemiah. In fact, Babylon had already fallen. Nebuchadnezzar and his successors had fallen, and the Persians were now in control. The Persians had already allowed many of the Jews to return home. And just as their captivity had taken place in three stages, so their return was accomplished in three stages. The first was under the leadership of Zerubbabel, at which time the temple was rebuilt. The second was under Ezra, who led the people in a great religious revival and a return to God. And the third stage was under Nehemiah, when he led the people in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. This last phase is the subject of our study. Nehemiah was the cupbearer for the Persian king named Artaxerxes. The king noticed a distinct change in the usually pleasant countenance of Nehemiah, and he asked him why. Nehemiah then told him it was because of the news that had been brought to him by a fellow countryman from Jerusalem. "I asked them concerning the Jews that had escaped, which were left of the captivity, and concerning Jerusalem, and they said unto me, 'The remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem also is broken down, and the gates thereof are burned with fire.'" Nehemiah chapter 1, verses 2 and 3. The walls had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon when Jerusalem had been destroyed by him. Without the walls, the city was an easy prey for whoever would wish to plunder and pillage. The city was without defense against the marauding nomads, the robbers, the beasts, just whatever. Therefore, the people were in disgrace and reproach. Now, these bad conditions grieved Nehemiah because he cared about his people, who were the people of God. He cared about what this situation was doing to the name of God before others. And this effect is revealed in Nehemiah 1 and verse 4. "It came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned a certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." But friend, Nehemiah did more than mourn and fast and pray. He was not content to stop there. He decided to do something about it. And this is the first lesson we need to learn. It is well and good to be concerned and to show concern in times of distress and need by our actions. It's worthwhile to pray. But coupled with that must be action that will affect the situation. Nehemiah determined to take action. He made up his mind that something could be done, and he set out to do all that he could. He acted. We now see Nehemiah leaving the Persian palace at Shushan with his face toward the distressed city of Jerusalem, a leader with a holy purpose and cause to attack the problem and to engage in a task that needed to be performed. He had no personal ambitions in this matter, but he wanted to remove the reproach of God's people and the name of God before others. Every noble task must have good leadership if the work is to be accomplished. Those who lead must have the devotion and dedication that it takes to do the work. Too many who lead lack the proper determination. Many worthwhile efforts do not succeed because of the lack of good leadership and the lack of vision. Proverbs 29 tells us, where there is no vision, the people perish. When Nehemiah furnished the kind of leadership this job requires, notice the next steps that he took. First, he thoroughly acquainted himself with the situation. Now, this is when he got to Jerusalem. He wanted not only to understand why the task had to be done, but he wanted to know what had to be done, and to figure out how it could be done, and when it could be done, and who could get it done. He went to the scene where the things were needed. One has said, and properly so, you cannot lead where you will not go, just like you cannot teach what you do not know. Nehemiah went, and he learned firsthand for himself. He went to count the cost. His counting of the cost was not to determine whether he would tackle the job or not. He had already determined to get the job done. He counted the cost to determine what it was going to take to get it done. He viewed the ruins back and forth and up and down, getting the facts and the conditions clear in his own mind. And having done that, he was in a position to develop situations and to make plans. Now, good plans are necessary in getting a job done. But let us learn, plans do not work. Regardless of how wonderful plans may be, plans do not work. People must do the work. We need plans to prevent waste and haphazard efforts, to be sure. We ought not go at a task with a hit-or-miss approach. That seldom succeeds, and the risk of failure is great when that is the manner of approach. But there's nothing magic in having a plan by itself, even a good plan. But Nehemiah got the whole matter clear before him even before he told anyone why he was back in Jerusalem. He took the initiative. He was a leader. Nehemiah not only knew the need of good leadership, but he also knew how essential it was to have a good fellowship. Regardless of how good the leadership may be, without fellowship, Nehemiah could not rebuild the walls alone. So he had to enlist good fellowship. Good plans are not much use when there's nobody around to execute them. He needed an informed, an aroused, a determined, and enthusiastic body of followers. So he called the people together, and he rehearsed before them the plight in which they existed, the needs that they had, and he offered his proposals. And then I said unto them, ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire? Come, let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God which was good upon me, and also the king's words which he had spoken unto me. You see, this last remark about the king's words referred to permission that he had secured from the Persian king before he left Shushan to use supplies that belonged to the king. Even before he left for Jerusalem, he had an eye on materials by which to do the work. Now the opportunity to get things done was before the people. The success or failure of the project rested not only on Nehemiah, but also on the people as well. And Nehemiah called for a decision, but one that was based on correct information. The challenge was placed before them. It was not a push forward on enthusiasm and a pep rally emotion. It was not just a fanciful dream. The followers had to be sold on the need and what was at stake enough to commit themselves to the task. They had to decide based on conviction rather than some supercharged and temporary fervor. And they were sold. What a good persuader Nehemiah must have been that day. Notice the reaction of the people. The essential ingredient in their story of success was their attitude. Nehemiah won their hearts. They were motivated by their attitude. The question before them really was whether they cared enough to assume the work. Did it really matter to them? Did they want the reproach removed? Would they do anything about it? What was their attitude? Until now, they were languishing in distress. Would they seize this opportunity? And their answer is one of the more thrilling responses of which we read in all the Bible. They said, "Let us rise up and build." Nehemiah 2:18. Their answer revealed their attitude. And what was that attitude? Nehemiah 4:6. The people had a mind to work. There it is, friend. They were willing, ready, and able to do the job, and sincerely wanted to do it. They were convinced and convicted about this matter, and they had the disposition to get to the task. Their answer reflected confidence in themselves, confidence in their leader, confidence in the nobility of their task, and confidence that the need must be met, and more than anything else, confidence in Almighty God whom they served. They were optimistic. They had hope. And nobody said, "That can't be done." Nobody whined, "It's a good idea, but we'd better wait a while and see how things go." Nobody complained, "Oh, this is too big for us." Nor did anybody suggest, "Nehemiah, this is a good idea, and you have our best wishes as you attempt to do it." No, the old adage prevailed that would persuade, "Can't never could, but can." Everyone felt keenly a personal responsibility in this matter. Each had a willingness to do his or her part. Together they knew they could do what was needed. This was their attitude toward the work and their response to this opportunity. If only we can learn that such an attitude and response is an essential ingredient in successfully laboring for the Lord. And we must remember that not everyone in the vicinity was in sympathy with the rebuilding of Jerusalem's walls. The Jews had their enemies, and there were those who enjoyed their weakness. So there was opposition and hindrances thrown in their path as the work proceeded. From the time their many opponents heard about the intent, they began to undermine it and to attack it from first one angle then another. Why, they sent word to the Persian king accusing Nehemiah of trying to raise a rebellion against the king and set up himself as a king. They tried to discourage the workers with ridicule of the quality of their work. They tried to stall and slow down the progress by urging Nehemiah to stop work and to negotiate, to come down to the plain of Ono for dialogues and discussions. Each effort they made, some impact for a little while. Plots were made to kill Nehemiah, especially if he had accepted their invitation to come to Ono to talk. That was the reason they wanted to bring him down there, so they might kill him. Nehemiah's answer to that plot was simply, "Oh no." He told them he was doing a good work, and he didn't have time to mouth, if you please, with those who opposed it. He was unwilling to compromise anything. And even though the enemies waged physical destruction against the work, forcing the Jews to labor during the day and stand guard during the night, almost as if they were building with one hand and protecting their work with the other, but night and day, without even so much as changing their garments, they had to stay on the job. But the wall went up. Now this is what mattered. In 52 days, they were able to erect the wall, an accomplishment once considered beyond their reach. They proved they could do it by doing it. Their efforts were constantly coupled with repeated prayer. We read in chapter after chapter of the approach to God in prayer. Now this showed on whom they relied. This showed the combination of their own efforts, their humility, and their dependence on God. It is one of the most inspirational and wonderful episodes of cooperation between man and God of which you read in all the Bible. There was splendid cooperation between the leaders and the followers. Workmanship won the day. The result was success. And let us realize that a tremendous measure of success was enjoyed almost from the beginning simply because they were willing to try. But they were able to enjoy total success because they erected that wall. The principles utilized in the rebuilding of the walls of Jerusalem are rather obvious, are they not? These principles are useful and applicable for us in upbuilding the Church of our Lord in the midst of a world of sinful darkness. We must recognize the need and get the facts and make the plans. There must be leadership, fellowship, workmanship, cooperation, and prayer. There has to be devotion and dedication and determination. These great and vital ingredients are indispensable in doing the Father's business. There must be that positive attitude, with a relentless persistence even against resistance. And this attitude must be demonstrated in the things that we actually do. We can accomplish our task just as they were successful in accomplishing their work. Every congregation has needs. What if every member of the congregation keenly sensed his or her personal responsibility toward the work, like these Jews sensed toward rebuilding that wall? With lost souls all around us, do we not have a cause? As David once asked his brother when criticized for suggesting he would meet Goliath, "Is there not a cause?" Spreading the gospel is the primary work of the Lord's church with respect to the sinful world. Getting to heaven is the eventual goal of every Christian, and part of that work is reaching out to others. A successful work cannot be done only by a faithful few. Is it not much better for the congregation to have a faithful many? Is it not profitable for each individual to be among that noble number? Most congregations have the manpower to get our task done, at least to be more productive in it. Various plans and programs that have proven scriptural and effective are available. The major program is Preach the Word, for without the Word there can be no salvation. There is the desperate need for more brothers and sisters to be involved and to realize personal duties toward the Lord, toward the church, and toward the lost. Those who just will not work, or who refuse to cooperate, who choose to hinder and to drag rather than to help, ought never be allowed to stifle the efforts of those who care enough to be about the Father's work. Those of us living today can give sincere thanks for the work that has been done in the past. Whatever efforts we make standing on the shoulders of those who have gone before us. But while we respect and commend the past, we must consider the present, and we must look to the future. Someday our own time will be considered the past. Will those of the future be able to look upon our time with thanksgiving because we assumed and discharged our duty faithfully? Does it not come down to this question? Can God count on you? Can He count on me? The welfare of the church, the salvation of souls, including our own, is dependent on how we respond to that question. Our first step is to enlist in the Lord's work by becoming a Christian, and then rising with others to the glorious work He has assigned us and expects us of us all. Dear people, let us have that mind to work. This has been A Burning Fire. Your speaker is Jim Boyd. Until next time.